Bylines Network podcast. Welcome to this brand new mini-series that I'm calling Election Fever. Basically, me and Chris are going to be looking at all of the quote-unquote big parties, and we're going to be predicting and theorizing what kind of impact they're going to have on the coming days and how this would shape in a general election whenever it's coming. It's a mystery at this point. I'm Julian Greenbank in Bristol.
And I'm Chris Davis in London.
Now, in case you haven't had a look at the title, today we're going to be discussing the media's favourites, Reform UK, and are they really on the rise, as quite a lot of people would have you believe. So, before we advance, I think it's best to actually discuss what the party is, what their policies are, and yeah, just generally look around Reform UK. An important distinction that I think we need to get out of the way is that according to its registration on gov.uk, it's a private company with one majority shareholder and one donor. The majority shareholder, unsurprise, is Nigel Farage.
He is honorary president.
He is also honorary president, which really gives off like El Duce vibes, doesn't it?
It is funny. And I mean, to be fair, he's honorary president, presumably because he helped to found it. And he was like, yeah, I'm just going to step back, but not quite step back as he usually does. He likes to remain sort of on the precipice of things, doesn't he? Not quite disappearing as we'd all like him to. But just ready to claw his way back in.
And here's the important distinction. The guy who is currently running it, I suppose as a CEO, for lack of a better term, Richard Tice, is also one of the biggest donors towards the party. He donated, if my memory serves correctly, £1 million to Reform UK. And the reason why he hasn't like set out any of like his own policies that are different from Nigel Farage is because he doesn't want to upset Nigel Farage. Because again, Nigel Farage is the majority shareholder. But Nigel Farage can't get rid of Richard Tice because Richard Tice will just walk away and take his money with him. So it's very much a Charlemagne Pope relationship, where the Pope crowns the emperors, but the emperor chooses the Pope. So,
it's an interesting one as well, because Nigel Farage is probably, well, he definitely is more well known than Richard Tice, especially with people who are into that kind of brand of politics. So the name, they need the name as well. But Richard Tice, well, he's a very wealthy man by all accounts. I think he's made his money through property.
The main reason why that was, and I am quoting TLDR News here, they theorized that the main reason why it's set up as a private company rather than a political party is so that basically the members don't have any say whatsoever. Because, if you remember UKIP, remember those days? Anyway.
They still exist. Let's.
Though? Do they really? There's a reason we're not covering UKIP, dude.
Yeah.
Anyway, UKIP was constantly maligned and drawn back by scandal after scandal after scandal, and all those people with the scandals had a lot of say in UKIP. Nigel Farage has nipped that in the bud now, because he is literally top of the pile. No one else gets a say. And if anyone has like a similar scandal to like what happened then, they're just gone. Like, I don't know if you remember, but at the last general election when Reform UK were the Brexit party, because, oh God, Brexit hadn't even like gotten through. Those were the days.
That's how long.
This is just turning into a nostalgia fest. Sorry. Because that's the reason why he could literally just go, okay, I'm standing down, everybody in every seat that they're standing, and I'm taking all of your money. And there was literally nothing any of them could do about it because they weren't members. They were technically employees.
I would imagine that means that also if it's a company and not a political party, that it kind of, there's different rules around donations and declaring.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I'm no expert on electoral commission law and regulation, but if it's a company, I would assume that things may be different. But I mean, it's in that they did used to be the Brexit Party, like you said. Obviously, they decided to branch out and become more than a single issue party, even though they did do quite well as the Brexit Party in the European Parliament. But it's worth saying that their electoral system is different to first past the post, which is why they did so well.
Every right-wing party did really well at the European elections, because the electoral system there is better. You know, it's more representative. And that unfortunately means that for single-issue parties, they inevitably do better at them because there's only one issue to rally around, and for that it was, hey, can we get this over and done with, please? Because, there was no nuance in Brexit. It was like all or nothing for the darling people of Brexit Party.
But
anyway,
Richard, he was an MEP, Richard Tice. He was previously an MEP for the Brexit Party, until obviously that we stopped being a member of the European Union and stopped sending MEPs there. But funnily enough, much like the honorary president, he has tried to run for office in the UK previously on several occasions and been unsuccessful on several occasions as well. So they do
is
have
it
that.
Is it as many as the honorary presidents, who I is to this day the most unsuccessful candidate for an MP?
I think ever. I think it's is it Nigel Farage ran eight? He ran eight times.
Eight or nine, yeah.
Times, and Richard Tice has run three times and been unsuccessful. So not quite, but there's still time.
Still time. So, since everyone likes to talk about Reform UK, we thought we'd actually like delve into a couple of their policies. And believe it or not, listeners, I did manage to find one policy that I do actually agree with.
I did as well, and I'm pretty sure it would be the same one.
So the policy that I agree with is getting rid of first past the post and opting for a much more proportional representation voting system.
Oh no, we have different policy. I agree with two of them then.
Chris, I'm shocked. What's happened to you, man? You used to be cool.
For the listeners, obviously they can't see the camera. I am wearing a blue jumper, but that's no indication of my political persuasion, I can assure you. No, the two policies that I saw that actually were like, oh, I kind of agree with that. The rest of it was absolute nonsense, and I don't agree at all. But electoral reform, yes, they support proportional representation. And
here's the thing. I'm going to read you like the exact wording. First past the post is an outdated voting system. Large numbers of voters have no representation in parliament, and new parties are shut out of the political system. Correct. Voter turnout would be the same. Would be some 10% higher with PR. A referendum is needed. So even though they mention PR, which is a voting system, they haven't actually said what kind of system they would replace it with. It could be PR, it could be VA, it could be something entirely different, which would still like skew in their favor, because let's face it, the main reason why they would have a different voting system to first past the post is because it would benefit them.
And I mean, that trend of not detailing what they actually want is pretty, it seemed to continue throughout their, I don't want to say manifesto, but policy proposal document that's on their website, because there's lists of what they want to reform, what they want to like do to certain services, but there's not really detail on how that would happen. So for example, the other thing that the other policy, which I kind of I think is agreeable and a lot of people in the country do, and one that Labour has talked about is reforming the House of Lords. But again, they just use the buzzwords like unelected cronyism and don't say exactly what they mean by reforming it. So, I mean, and they're also in the document, it accuses the House of Lords of not actually being an effective second house, which, to be fair, that's debatable.
That is debatable.
When they don't really sit every day and they sort of start halfway through and whatever.
So, quick fire round. Here are 10 that are easy to sum up. Freeze non-essential immigration, detain asylum seekers and process them offshore, a la Australia, deport foreign criminals, scrap net zero promises, scrap renewable energy subsidies, ban transgender ideology in schools. That could mean literally anything. I mean, I don't know about you, unless school has changed very, very differently. I didn't have teachers come up to me and just go, you know what? You could be a girl. Just saying.
No, we didn't have that in school.
So it's just kind of like, what is the transgender ideology? I don't know about you. Again, I don't know about you, but every trans person I've ever met has most just been a, hey, can I please live? Please?
I mean, maybe it's the same as the gay agenda.
We're not going to mention that. I'll have to report you to headquarters.
I'll lose my gay card.
Banning teaching critical race theory in schools, which basically means anything that isn't pro-British Empire we don't like. Leave the ECHR. I don't think I need to explain to you why that's a terrible idea. Apart from anything else, it will mean we join the same club as Russia and Belarus. Not a club I want to join, to be perfectly frank. Maintain single-sex spaces, which sounds like a good idea, but is actually like a buzzword that's thrown around by like anti-trans activists. And of course, stop the war on motorists. So yeah, those are the 10 big policies that they have in their, I don't know what it's called, but they don't call it a manifesto, do they?
No, it's their sort of contract with you.
Yeah, they call it a contract.
Which again makes sense.
Not a company.
It makes sense because they're not a political party, they're a company, no, technically. But yeah, they are the rightest of right wing, but also...
There was like one other one which just made me giggle. Save £5 in every 100. Basically, we make these savings in business and at home. The public sector must be no exception. Every manager across the government must find savings without touching frontline services. We could slash wasteful spending, cut bureaucracy, and negotiate better value procurement across every department. This will enable lower taxes, more money in your pocket, and boost our economy. This saves $50 billion a year.
That's a nice promise, but like...
How?
It doesn't... Yeah, it's a nice promise, but it doesn't actually make any sense. Because you're talking about public spending, like there is actually a substantial amount of public spending at the moment anyway, and that frontline services are coping with current demand, which they're not. So these are wealthy people. They don't know what it's like to have to rely on the NHS. They don't know what it's like to have to claim benefits. They don't know what it's like to be a single parent with children working full time and rely on social housing, for example. But because the ideas that they have, and it picks up on the people who it's looking to win over voters who voted for Brexit and who abandoned Labour and sort of the red wall, those are the people they're aiming for. And those things all sound great. But when you put it to paper and you try and make it work, it just, anyone with the knowledge of how the public services exist at the moment anyway, and what this country actually needs, the policies are pie in the sky. They just sound good.
Yeah, and that's And that's basically what all of these policies are. They're buzzwords to me. It's saying, and I know this is probably like same with like all other manifestos, but it's with these guys in particular, they are saying like buzzwords that are associated with like this the so-called culture wars, you know, transgender ideology, war on motorists, the stop critical race theory. You know, that just kind of hints at like the kind of audience that they're hoping to grasp. The people who see anything that's different as bad.
It's populism at its
It's
core.
populism. Like they've taken what Boris Johnson started and just gone, okay, I'll take it to like the next mountain and then to the mountain after that. And if I'm going to be perfectly honest with you, listeners, I didn't want to start with Reform UK. I didn't want to talk about these guys. I wanted to talk about the Tories and how they're doomed. But the main thing that changed our minds is happened a couple of days from recording, where 30p Lee Anderson defected from the Conservatives to Reform UK.
That was after he was suspended as a Conservative MP for making comments that were Islamophobic. So, of course,
And also just flat out racist,
yeah.
although I do suppose Islamophobia and racism do go hand in hand.
So, of course, you know, it says something about Reform when they would accept an MP who has made comments like that. That really shows their true colours. As well as the massive slogan emblazoned behind Lee Anderson when he made his speech that said, let's get Britain back, you know, as if it's been taken somewhere or by people. That's why we are talking about it this week, rather than the Conservatives and how they're doomed. But the two are linked, in
But don't
fairness.
worry, Tory episode is coming along with everybody else. We're unbiased here.
But the issue of whether the Tories are doomed and whether Reform are on the rise are linked. So me and Jules are both of the agreement that the way that our electoral system works, it's very unlikely that Reform will return any members of Parliament in the next election, which is why they want proportional representation.
I mean,
But
to be fair, so do the Greens and so do the Lib Dems. But again, that's because that a more proportional system would benefit them more than first past the post. It's why Labour and the Conservatives wants to keep first past the post. Because
For
that's the electoral system that will mean that they get the most power. Now, I think it's about time that we answer the buzzing question that has been hanging around us since the start of this episode. Are Reform really on the rise? And I think we're both in agreement when I say no, absolutely not.
I think we're glad as well.
So I'm going to approach this from a historical angle because I do like me a bit of history. So I don't know if anybody remembers a little political party called the BNP. Remember them? Remember how we all laughed at their leader, Nick Griffin? So, first the BNP. They were polling around 9, 10% in early 2010. They had just come out of like I would say a fairly successful European election and local election as well. You know, they had 26 seats overall in councils across the country. That's not to be sneezed at. They put up 338 candidates, polling at 563,743 votes. And the number of seats they won was a big old goose egg, just absolutely nothing. We mentioned them earlier, but I don't know if people remember UKIP. Remember UKIP? They were once upon a time polling as the third largest party in the UK. In fact, in the month just before the May 2015 general election, they had roughly 14% on most polls. And they failed spectacularly. Like they barely even like came third in most of their seats. And they're not in the same vein whatsoever in terms of politics. But I do also remember another young upstart party in 2019 that managed to get a couple of MPs from multiple parties. Remember Change UK?
God.
I mean, I barely do. But Change UK, very similarly to the Brexit Party, were polling at their peak around 10%. And of course, the Brexit Party was started alongside them, and admittedly, they did get 25%. But again, at the actual general election, they barely even hit 5% in terms of like actual polling. So I would argue that no, reform aren't on the rise, much like their far right counterparts of the past. The only reason to me why they are so widely discussed is because the block of voters that they are aiming for are the same block of voters that the Tories are trying to win over. The red wall, Brexit voting, concerned about immigration voter who are very passionate about their feelings, shall we say.
And it's interesting, the comparison to previous parties who have had similar policies and similar aims is at the moment, especially given what recent polls have shown, very, very apt. So, I mean, your theory has been proved right. If Reform are to follow the fate of UKIP, they are currently polling at 14%, and they are currently the third largest party according to YouGov and other polls. So that would.
Sorry to interrupt you, Chris, but I saw an article of Polling Report UK, and this is from the 20th of April, from last year, obviously. Oh no, 2 years ago, saying that the BNP, remember them, are currently polling at 7% on the latest YouGov poll from 2 years ago. And it's just kind of like, if the BNP are still like getting poll numbers, I'm not really that optimistic about like Reform's chances.
They are polling at the moment higher than they ever have done. But again, the peaks have been seen with UKIP. We saw the peak and then it disappeared. The only difference is now that they don't have the European Parliament to send candidates off to because we don't elect people there anymore. And the system that we use to send representatives to the European Parliament would have allowed them to send a substantial amount of people. But they are on 14% at the moment, and it is worth talking about what their candidates in constituencies are doing and what their aim is to do. Richard Tice's stated aim is, and he has said this, he wants to smash and destroy the Conservative Party at the next election. His words, smash and destroy. Very, well, great verbs, let's say. But they're at the by-elections, and there have been a lot of them, as you will know, because we've done several special episodes on those. They have come third in a fair few, but the results overall are mixed. They had the best by-election result in Wellingborough, which was very recently. They got 13%, which wasn't far off what YouGov put them on nationally at the moment. In Kingswood, they got 10%. And in Rochdale, which was the most recent by-election, I think they came sixth. So again, quite far behind. But what I think the main danger here is not that they're going to win any seats, but they will make the Conservatives lose seats because you'll
Yeah,
have the section.
that's like the other reason why I think they're also making news, because there is, like I said, they're both going after like the same kind of like voter base, and one could argue that the Conservatives are leaving behind like their traditional centre-right base, and they're going after like the red wall voters who voted for the Conservatives because the Conservatives were very vocal about where their position was on Brexit. That's kind of what lost Labour the last election, I think. So what I think might happen, as I suspect you might think would happen, is that the right-wing votes might actually be split for the first time in a long time in a British general election.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there, when there was sort of when Nigel Farage, I think, was in charge of the Brexit Party, it may have been at the last election. I think he didn't stand candidates in Conservative-held seats.
Yeah, he specifically stood down members in Conservative-held seats, but kept them up in everywhere else, basically. That's why, for some reason, there was a Brexit Party member in every Bristol constituency, but none in, say, the Conservative parts of London.
And the difference in this coming election is that Reformer fielding candidates in more or less
everywhere
every against Conservatives and Labour candidates. So it's very, very, and again, looking at the data, they have 83% of their candidates, 83% of seats in the East Midlands, they are putting candidates up for. In the East of England, they're putting candidates in 82% of seats. They're not going so much for places where they don't think they'll win. So Scotland, they're not really giving a chance. But they're going for what, like you said, where Boris Johnson did well in 2019. And they're going to try and take the Tories out, basically. But what that will result in is parties like Labour and the Lib Dems getting the seats, because they will be depriving the Conservatives of a majority. And I think out of anything, it will be, if Reform do well in individual seats, depriving Conservative MPs of winning, that will be why Labour wins the next election, more so than people voting Labour, potentially.
Potentially. So, yeah, are Reform UK really on the rise? Not really, at least not in the way the mainstream media is putting out. Thank you very much for joining us for this Election Fever special. We will be back next week, where we'll be looking at another one of the major parties. We have yet to discuss which one. And I do hope that you'll join us when that happens. I've been Julian in Bristol.
And I've been Chris in London.